The Prime Minister is in Bangkok for the East Asia Summit with regional leaders trying to clinch a massive new trade agreement, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. It could become the largest global trade pact in history, taking in nearly half the world's population, around a third of global GDP. Dr. Shiro Armstrong is the director of the Australia-Japan Research Centre at the ANU. He joins us from our Canberra studios this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Hamish.
Just how mammoth is this trade deal?
It's significant. As you said, it's about 50% of the global population, around a third of global GDP. It's an important time to get this done. There's a lot of uncertainty globally with the US-China trade war, with protectionism in the United States and parts of Europe. So we've got markets closing up in a lot of these places. And just to keep markets open in Asia, I think is really important for us at this particular time. And in fact, go further and open markets further in Asia and get that commitment to do so.
From the perspective of Australian businesses, can you give us the risk versus reward snapshot?
Well, look, the risk is not getting it done and feeding the uncertainty. The reward really isn't just further opening markets for Australian business, but in fact, making big progress between our trading partners. So China, Japan, India, South Korea and Japan, these are very large economies that don't have bilateral arrangements. And getting a regional agreement like this done will help give a boost to global growth just at a time when it's really needed.
But I do want to get to the sort of possibilities of a deal being scored here and the reasons why there are sticking points. But are there particular Australian sectors that might be expected to take a hit under these new arrangements?
There always are. Now, to the extent that sectors get hit depends on the details of the agreement, which will come out. But we have to remember that the agreement, as all these trade agreements usually do, make our economy larger and stronger and create jobs. So it's a matter of the adjustment and the transition. So that's where Chile right now reminds us of the importance of social safety nets, spreading the gains from trade so that we can adjust to the new opportunities that these agreements open up, but not to stay static and worry about the losses. We have to be conscious of the sectors in the economy that won't do that well out of this, but in aggregate will do well. And I think that's important to remember. We need the social protections to make sure we manage that process.
And can they be built into big trade deals like this?
Usually not so much, but the importance of this kind of agreement with ASEAN as a center is that there's a big economic cooperation agenda. This is not really recognized too often, but getting the framework right for that economic cooperation agenda means that we'll be with other countries sharing experience, capacity building, and thinking about ways to manage those sorts of transitions, not just for us, but importantly for our trading partners. So India, Japan, Indonesia, and all these countries share similar problems of trying to spread the gains from trade and gains from technological progress. So it's closer economic, but also political cooperation that this agreement can potentially bring.
The indications this morning are that India is the country that's holding up the possibility of moving in the next steps towards a deal. Why is India a sticking point?
Yeah, well, India, unlike the rest of East Asia, that's part of most of which is part of APEC and other arrangements, India hasn't committed to openness to trade and investment like the rest of us have through these various processes over the decades. So the Indian economy is slowing right now. That makes it a little bit harder for Prime Minister Modi and the Indian government to commit to opening up. But it really has had trouble in the past in committing to open up its markets further, to commit to new rules through the WTO and so forth. So it's all coming to a crunch. The agreement, from what I understand, is all but done. There are a few sticky bilateral issues, but the main holdout is India. And there's a risk of going ahead without India. 15 members instead of 16. Now, that would be a real pity and a big blow to the agreement. But the idea would be to get India back on board later on. But I think the first best is for Prime Minister Morrison to work with the other leaders to try to encourage Prime Minister Modi to bite the bullet, make those commitments, realise that it's a gradual process of phasing in these commitments. Indian industry is not going to be obliterated by Chinese competition overnight. And there's a framework there to support India. It's not a bilateral agreement with China. It's a broad regional agreement. So it's the best way for India really to join these global value chains in East Asia that have brought real prosperity and stability to the region.
And how much does the China-US trade war frame these negotiations?
Yeah, it frames them a lot. So I mentioned the US-China trade wars created a huge amount of uncertainty, and that's part of the reason why global growth is consistently downgraded over the last year and a half. So that has meant that the agreement, the RCEP agreement, is even more important now. And I think the leaders have grasped that importance, the strategic importance of getting this done.
How do you describe Australia's position on this, given that Scott Morrison has been, on the one hand, publicly backing Donald Trump in his dispute with China over trade, and at the same time trying to negotiate RCEP with the Chinese?
Well, I think it's important to realise that this is, you know, the Australia-China relationship, that's our most important economic relationship by far, and we want to manage that. We want to work with the Chinese, but also work with partners in the region to manage that relationship. And you know, it's very difficult for Scott Morrison to openly criticise the US, but I think it's been made clear that our Prime Minister and our Minister think that the trade war is very damaging. We've said a lot about resolving that quickly. So I think it's quite clear that the importance is resolving the bilateral trade tensions between the United States and China, but also moving ahead with rules and with liberalization, that is opening markets in our region. So a lot of the problems from between the United States and China are just a lack of rules in all these areas like intellectual property, services, investment, and data flows.
So you see this, the pursuit of this deal with China, as entirely consistent with what Scott Morrison's been saying about China when he was in the United States?
To an extent, yes. I think so. And this is where China not dealing with the United States only in a bilateral lens, but making progress on rules and market openings with the rest of the world will actually help resolve some of those tensions between the United States and China.
Dr. Shira Armstrong, thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure.
Dr. Shira Armstrong is the director of the Australia-Japan Research Centre at the Australian National University.